One of the times I got lost in the bush was when I was searching for an abandoned gas well lease on my ATV. Usually when people get lost in the steep terrain or dense trees, they leave the trail and they can't find their way back to it. Let me tell you, you can get lost when all the trees have been cut down, and the choice of trails and roads and paths become so plentiful that it seems impossible to find a sustainable sense of direction. The trails twist, they turn, and they fork. All the stumps and the brush piles look the same. Some trails lead back to the main trail and others just dead end in nowhere. The land looks desolate, devoid of any landmarks. There are no high points or hilltops to get a sense of anything. I once had an inkling in this area. I'd been in there before, when the trees were there, before it was logged. This once familiar area was now a sea of stumps and brush piles and muskegs and haul roads and skid trails. Going on, you know, gut instinct and an intuitive sense of direction, I even pulled out my compass a few times. Got me further and further from where I needed to be. Trying to get back on track with a few shortcuts via a muskeg cut line that I thought would get me back got me stuck and soaked. It was fall. I got wet and very cold. I finally made the decision to backtrack to where I thought maybe I'd went wrong. It was a long trip, but maybe safer in the long run. That is where the world is now. Folks are wet, they're cold, they're miserable, and they're lost. Some are determined that the next fork in the road or a new trail will steer them right. Maybe it's time to backtrack in reality. Try and actually find the ancient paths, the good way. You know, that verse that I always talk about, Jeremiah 6:16, finding the good trails, the good paths. Maybe it's time to do that before the darkness and the cold takes too much of a hold of you. Just thinking about it makes me shiver. Let me throw a little more brush on the fire, take away the chill, while we talk about the dangers of forked roads and misleading trails.
You have found the frequency of the Enemy Patrol podcast. Please stand by for new directions. Over.
Welcome to the Fire of the Enemy Patrol, a place where folks who can't believe this is happening find themselves. I am the Anomic Ranger, your very own reality scout, and as your scout, I give you information you can use as you move ahead in this adventure called life. But you are the general in this campaign. It is you that makes the decisions for your own life. Your humble reality scout just gives you the lay of the land, so to speak. You can use my reports or don't. I just tell you what I see. If you want to know more, you can subscribe so you don't miss a report from the Enemy Patrol, which doesn't come out very often, but if you subscribe, maybe it'll show up. You can also take a look at my website, anomicranger.com. If you want to send me an email, you can do so on the contact portion of my website, which I have shut down, so I don't know why I keep saying that. I had to shut it down because I get too much spam in there and I don't have time to deal with it all. Or you can email me direct at animepatrolhq@yahoo.com. I'll say that again, animepatrolhq@yahoo.com. And if you like what I write or podcast, you can give me a good rating, you can subscribe or comment, But most importantly, share with somebody. That's really how I want to grow this. I want to grow this as organically as possible. One person tells another person. At this point, I would like to point out that I haven't put a lot on here. I'm not very prolific. I know that's bad if you want to do all the things that you're supposed to do to become popular, but I don't know. I do it when I can do it, and I do it as the Spirit leads, so to speak. At this time, I just want to point out that, on this date, it's actually September 11th, 2025. And there's a lot of things happening in the world. Just yesterday, a very good young man was gunned down. I don't know what to say about that. It's still coming out what it could have been. Kind of hit everybody kind of funny. I think it made a wave in the spirit world. Charlie Kirk was a good man. And it's sad the way it turned out, but I'm really worried about how it's going to affect everybody. I think somebody's trying to start a war. They want a war between left and right. We're going to talk about that today. But anyway, we're going to move along here. And I'm just going to say that Charlie Kirk has inspired me to quit nudging. This site, this podcast has always been about a little bit about nudging. I never like to get in people's faces, and I always, listen to people when they said, don't shove your religion down my throat. Don't shove your Jesus down my throat. And I always kind of respected that. It's like, I didn't like it when somebody did it to me. So why would I do it to somebody else? And yet at the same time, it's like, I think it's time. I think it's time everybody has this put in front of them, because I think time is growing very, very, very short. I know there's a lot of people saying that, no, Jesus is coming back on the 23rd and 24th of September. Well, if that's the case, then hallelujah. But at the same time, I don't like the way the date setters do that. And then, if it doesn't happen, then there's people that are lost. They know it was supposed to happen. It'll happen when God wants it to happen. That's all I can say. But it could be. I've looked at all the stuff that they talk about, and it's very possible. It's very possible. That's the thing about prophecy. It either, when you look back on it, it fits perfectly, but when you're looking ahead on it, it's pretty tough to make it happen, because as humans, we're very much lost in time. Time does not do well for us humans, because the Bible says we're just a vapor, we're grass in the field, we don't last very long. And that's why prophecy is given, so that people repeat it to one another and they talk to one another about it. Anyway, let's just move right into this. And I will say that lately, the way the world is going, and I've seen this happen in my lifetime, but lately it's become very popular to talk about things like UFOs and cryptics and transdimensional beings and manifesting and putting out into the universe and yada, yada, yada. And then everybody treats it like it's something new. But it's not. The ancients believed in so many of these woo-woo things. Let me just explain woo-woo. I titled this one, The Root of Woo, Science, Technology, and Magic. And it's all interconnected. Until very recently, I'll just say that the ancients believed in many woo-woo things, and then somewhere along the way we got brainwashed into something else. Our culture had a strong division in the last 100 years. Let's call it 100 years. The brainwashing that went on. But we, with this brainwashing, we had very strong divisions between materialism and spirituality. There were those who thought in terms of atoms and test tubes, and then there were those who were more inclined to religion and spirituality, or woo-woo. I like to call the test tube folks the Star Trek generation. Woo-woo was always explained away, if you think about Star Trek, by solid science. Anything not explained by science was simply a concept that was just waiting to be explained by hard science. Woo-woo is not allowed by those people. This scientism brainwashing time, it's like, I don't know, our entire scientific-only world has been brought to its knees in the last little while. Concepts of reality have become elastic and getting stretched and questioned. I mean, think of things like the speed of light. I was hearing a guy talking about, well, the speed of light is not necessarily a constant. It's possible that it can change, especially when it's under scrutiny. Math, I mean, the mathematics that they do, you know, they're up to 10 dimensions or something now. Some strange equations are showing up. Darwinism has completely collapsed. I mean, a lot of the stuff that's, you know, Darwinism everybody thought that, solid science. But no, the more they look and the more they look at things, and they're having a hard time finding, you know, the different species are supposed to change slowly over time. There should be, you know, all these, you know, zillions of bones that's supposed to show between, you know, one species and another. And they just haven't found that. They come up with, you know, different theories about that. But it's just not there. And since they've got computers now, and they got very big computers now, and they put in there, okay, well, how long would it take showing, like, you know, an animal gets a little bit of a change, and then a little bit more of a change, and a little bit more of a change, like, how long would it take to change one species into another? And they, you know, feed that into the computers, and it's like, there isn't enough time available to change that. So they come up with this concept of punctuated equilibrium. And it's like, if you really boil that down, what they're saying is that a lizard lays an egg and a chicken pops out. I mean, I know I'm simplifying it, but that's essentially what they're saying, is that all of a sudden there's this big change. And it just doesn't work that way. And then there's the concept of, well, there's some things in the world that are so complicated, you can't make small changes and get from point A to point B. It's like it all has to appear at once. So this scientific-only world is falling apart. The very concept of reality itself starting to be questioned. It's like, well, maybe we're just in this, you know, great big movie set. Maybe this is all a projection. Even archaeology has been turned upside down in the last little while. Like, they found, you know, ancient cities and stuff that shouldn't have been there. Like, we shouldn't have civilization back, because, you know, this whole concept of, well, we started out as monkeys, and then we got smarter, and then we learned how to use sticks, and then we learned how to use stones, and then we learned how to chip the stones and make them sharp, and on and on and on. And they have this whole timeline laid out as to, you know, how this is supposed to happen. And it's all of a sudden they find a city that shouldn't be there. They shouldn't be able to do what they're doing in this city. You know, giant stones moved and stones cut, and they shouldn't have tools to be able to do that. So anybody that's paying attention, even amongst the common people, are having problems with trusting these scientific experts. And the last few years haven't helped trusting experts. So that leaves the door open for many competing concepts for reality itself. Hence my opening of a clear-cut forest, creating many false trails. All that you think should be there is now gone. What you do is now cut down. Previously flat land is now hills of stumps and trash. All that once was familiar is finished. At this point, I should do a quick introduction to the last two podcasts. The last two podcasts, I started out talking about what's in the Bible and the ancient truths that are found in Genesis. And the first one was about Genesis 3 and 6, I think, and the last one was Genesis 11. So, in the first one, I talked about the curse. And it's the story, the familiar story that everybody's heard. It's, you know, the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve and that whole story about, you know, eating the apple and I had a bit of a glitch there. Anyway, sorry about eating the apple and then God comes down and says, gives out the curse. And the curse is essentially, he curses Satan as the snake and says what's going to happen to the woman and what's going to happen to the man. And essentially, it's what I'm laying the introduction into is what they call the seed war. Because what God says is the seed of the serpent will be at war with the seed of the woman. And the seed of the woman will crush Satan's head and he will bruise the seed of the woman's heel. Now, this all sounds, to anybody that's not familiar with it, it sounds like a bunch of gobbledygook, but basically what God is saying is like, okay, mankind, you have made this decision now. I gave you the earth. I gave you dominion over the earth. And now you've essentially given it away by questioning me. And there'd be a lot of people that would go, wow, gee, that doesn't seem very fair. But no, it's perfectly fair. It's like, think in terms of lawyers and law. And it's like, God gave dominion to the man, but the man went ahead and went against what God gave him. So then the one that tempted is the one that then took ownership of the earth, control of the earth. Now in church, you're not going to hear a lot about the seed of the serpent. What is the seed of the serpent? Well, that doesn't really come out until Genesis 6. And it's a very short little part in Genesis 6. It talks about that the sons of God, which is, what is it, B'nai Elohim? It's the basically angels, the watchers that were put on the earth to watch what mankind was doing, keep track of it. And they saw the daughters of men and they decided that they were beautiful. And they decided that if they could procreate, if they could figure that out, then they could take dominion that way by progenerating with the humans. So they did, and they made a race of giants. And it's in Genesis, it's very short, but if you want a longer story about that, then you have to go to different books that aren't biblical. And there's a lot of Christians that really, you know, the Book of Enoch was not put in the canon. I think it should have been there, but you know, it doesn't really matter. It's definitely an ancient book, and it definitely ties in a lot with the Bible. In fact, it's quoted in the New Testament by some of the New Testament writers. So whether they would say that, whether it was canon or whether it was history or what it was, it doesn't really matter, because they tell the full story. And the way it's laid out in Genesis, it's almost like whoever wrote Genesis just expected you to understand that story. It's like they put it in this little piece in Genesis, and they it's just a quick overview, and they expect people reading that to kind of understand that story. It's a bigger story. And there's a lot of people say that the Book of Enoch is one of the oldest books out there. Just for reference, it's included in the Ethiopian Bible, which is a very ancient Bible. It's also included in the Dead Sea Scrolls. So it seemed like there was a plan to eliminate the Book of Enoch all throughout history, and it was preserved in those two places. It was in the Ethiopian Bible, which was far away from the center of everything, and it was also in the Dead Sea Scrolls, which the Essenes wrote down. Now, to me, that gives it legitimacy of at least historical reference. But if you read the Book of Enoch, there's also a lot of prophecy about Jesus Christ in that. So to me, it's rather important. And essentially what it lays down is what these watchers did, and what they produced, this seed, if you want to call it that, was the seed of it was angelic and human. It was a hybrid. Not only that, but they were giants. They were huge. They were powerful. And I don't, you know, when it says giants, I don't agree that, I mean, some of them were huge. Some of them were giant, as we think of giants. But I think it just says that they were the mighty men of renown. I think some of them were maybe super strong. Some of them were really big. Some of them were maybe spiritually powerful. We don't really know. And it's not really important that we do know. All we know is that the earth became very evil with them, because these hybrids did not get along with humans. In fact, eventually, according to the Book of Enoch, they were hunting them and eating humans. And you can find this story, and like I said, you can go back and you can listen to my last two podcasts, and you can get all this, but even the native tribes, every people on earth has talks about giants. And I don't think everybody was just, you know, telling stories. If they did, it's amazing how all around the world, everybody tells the same story. And it also talks about how the flood, how God sent the flood. He looked down and his creation had all been messed up. And it wasn't just the giants. It wasn't that, but they were playing around with genetics. How they did it, I don't know. I mean, we say, well, what did they have, lab coats and test tubes? Well, maybe they didn't. Maybe they figured out another way to mess with genetics. I don't know. So anyway, God looked down and he kept one family, and it was Noah. And if you look in the Bible, it says he was perfect in his generations. In other words, his genetics were normal. That was they were God-given genetics. They were what God created in the first place. So God flooded the earth except for eight people and the animals 2x2 that went into the ark. And there was some of them were more than 2x2. Which we always show those cute little cartoons of, you know, the giraffe and the elephant sticking their head out of this little tub boat. And that's not what it was about at all. It's cute in Sunday school, but it's not realistic. It was a bigger story than that. Anyway, God killed everything. He wiped out life on earth. Started over. And then in Genesis 11, which is the last podcast I did, it talks about how after the ark stopped and mankind started to generate again, well, then we get this, and I should say that when the angels were procreating with men and all that, there's a lot of people call that in ancient writings, they call it the golden age. And think in terms of, these old stories, the Greeks have them, the Romans have them, and they all talk about this golden age when the gods were on the earth. They talk about Atlantis and all these other stories and how wonderful it was. Well, they're talking about this time when these watchers, these powerful angels, were procreating with people. And you just think about those ancient stories, the Romans and the Greeks and Zeus, and, you know, he'd seduce women and he'd produce this man who has superpowers, and on and on and on. It's all telling the same story. So this golden age that they talk about in these ancient stories is talking about this world before the flood. So the flood happened, wiped it all out. And then after the flood, there's a lot of stories about that, how that worked out. It's the Tower of Babel story. And it talks about, this man who was a mighty hunter before the Lord. And then you go into the ancient text and it talks about him. He can have all different names, Gilgamesh but in the Bible he has a different name. And that's the other thing, talking about the language got messed up. And there's, you know, I've heard atheists talking about, there's, 2,300 gods, blah, 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 blah. So like, which one should I worship? And actually, if you take all the languages and you boil it all down, that the languages were messed up, and if you go back and look, there's actually not 2,300. There's 2,300 different names. But if you go back through and you look at what each one did and, you know, what each one was known for, there's actually very few, maybe down to as small as 200. And then all these different peoples that worshiped them. Well, let's keep in mind that our concepts about history and even reality itself is mostly lies. I mean, we're under the spell of these fallen ones still to this day. And maybe they're still running our world in a certain way. Maybe these ancient gods, you know, almost from the beginning, have always been there, these fallen angels. They keep coming back. They keep poking in. They keep sticking their nose in. And they like to tell people how powerful they can be if they just, you know, follow and worship them. If you want to look at worshiping, I mean, worshiping can take on many forms. Maybe they don't bow down, but they certainly give their time and this ancient concept of a supreme being. You know, a person has to keep an open mind at this point. Like I said, if you want to go back and listen to the last two podcasts, I go into it in more detail. But maybe it's time to accept this reality that these ancient gods, if you want to call them that, small g, are fallen angels. And they are very powerful. And they are very amazing. But at this point, I would just like to, I don't know, say a little prayer. And I pray we get to this point, because maybe you're thinking right now, you're going, oh my goodness, where is this guy going? Like, all this stuff. And I just pray that the Holy Spirit will guide your heart into truth, and that the understanding of truth will lead you to the one true God, which is Jesus the Christ. Okay, so now we have a kind of a different history that I'm laying out here, very roughly, because like I said, you got to go listen to the last two podcasts if you want some more detail to that. And it's maybe a new concept of who might run this world. You know, it's like everybody always says they, you know, it's like, well, they want us to do this and they're doing that and they're doing something else. And you listen to these guys and it's like, you know, you might be thinking, well, you really got your tinfoil hat on too tight, because I mean, how could that all be arranged? How could that all be, how would you put it? How do you make something happen all the way around the world? I mean, governments are pretty inept at things. You know, if you want the government to do something, especially if it's positive, it's like they can hardly organize a bake sale. And yet somehow we all have to take stock of it, because in 2020, when they decided that the whole world needed to be in on a certain thing, wow, it was amazing how that all just kind of worked. All these governments did the same thing. They all shared the same thing. They all forced people to do the same thing. How did they organize all that? You know, and you can look at the World Economic Forum and you can look at Klaus Schwab, and he's, you know, like this almost cartoon bad guy. It's like, how are they doing that? How are all these governments all on the same page? How are these evil people all running all this? Well, if you take things into the spirit world, if you take things into this concept that maybe there's these fallen angels that are in contact with these super rich, super evil people, and they're all getting their walking orders, that's maybe not that far out. So let's just pretend that this is the history of these, you know, in the background, there's these fallen angels, that these people that are running things are in contact with. How are they in contact with them? Well, that's hard to say. Yeah, you look at rituals, you look at all these different things that people do, and you've all heard about it. Everybody's heard about, you know, the Club of Rome, and all these guys get together and they all just kind of get walking orders. They don't sit and decide things. They are all told this is the way it's going to go. So who's actually, you know, writing up these orders? Something to think about. I do know that there's stories and myths and concepts that even after the flood, that before the flood, there was a lot of these fallen angels had, and there's stories about pillars with stuff written on them, and there's stories about stone slabs that were written on, and there's that these ancient writings of how to contact and how to do different rituals and bring about different things, and it's all cloaked in mysticism. And I'll tell you right now that you don't need to dig in and find all this stuff. I mean, you can if you want to. If you really need to weigh in on it, this mystical understanding of history, these, you know, old gods and ancient magic and secret societies, and it was a way for them to pass down this information. And I mean, it gets really deep and it can be interesting. I mean, it's really interesting, but it's also a very time consuming rabbit hole if you want to go there. But as your reality scout, I'll tell you, you don't need to. It's not necessary that you track down every detail of these ancient societies, secret societies, ancient books, secret books. It's unnecessary. I've followed a few of those trails. I haven't looked deep, but I've fallen down those rabbit holes and I've bought the t-shirt. But at the center of it all, I'll tell you right now, it's pretty simple. These ancient fallen angels set themselves up as gods and they ruled for centuries. They procreated with humans and did unspeakable things with animals and plants and all the other parts of the creations of Yahweh. Hence the flood. That's why God flooded it. these fallen angel religions and bloodlines continued into the time of the Old Testament, into the land of Canaan. It came back after the flood. And when the Israelites came into Canaan, God raised up the Israelites to smote them. And that's why there's orders, and a lot of people, you know, say, oh, the God of the Old Testament is bloodthirsty. I mean, he called, you know, for killing of men, women, children, and even the animals. Yeah, well, there's a good chance that the reason that God called for that is because they were starting to do it again. They were messing with genetics. They were messing with all this stuff, and they were putting in these angelic lines into these people, and so God told them to wipe them out, and you know what? They didn't. In many places, they didn't do what they were told to do. And God told them that they, you know, these bloodlines are going to curse you forever. These bloodlines. Who today is really, really interested in bloodlines? I mean, who? Isn't it the royal class? Don't they brag about how far back they can follow their bloodlines? I mean, they took it to the point of where, I mean, they kept breeding into this. They were really worried about the bloodlines to the point where they were inbreeding so bad that they were becoming unhealthy. And then you have these secret societies and these exclusive clubs and these mystery religions and on and on and on. I mean, you can wave this off as some ancient hocus pocus or maybe a delusional royal class talking about their blue blood. But these elites believe it strongly. And they're always seeking power. I mean, our history is littered with the death and destruction caused by power-hungry people led by, I think, these fallen interdimensional beings. Boy, try say that five times fast. I mean, really, there's nothing new under the sun. It is a shock to enter this world, these possibilities, one where everything isn't just materialistic and simple, that maybe these ancient stories of gods and demigods and half-beasts and sorcerers and miracle workers were at least maybe partially true. The Greeks, the Romans, the Sumerians, they all talked about it. And then we have to look at our own religious lies. I mean, in Christianity and you know, the paintings and what was put on the sides of churches and where angels are chubby little babies with wings and demons all have horns and hooves and carry forks for, I don't know, turning over the sinners on the griddles in hell. And, you know, all of history is just, you know, ignorant savages having a go at historical make-believe. You can believe that if you want to, but I don't think so. When you hear these ancient tales of gods, do you really think some desert dweller out there, you know, trying to find water and find enough grass for his camels to eat, saw a cool looking boulder and decided to chip a god out of it? And then he fell down and worshipped it? That ancient peoples were so much more ignorant and gullible than the oh-so-smart atheist materialists, scientists of today. Like, oh, those poor ignorant people bowing down in front of a stone. And I don't believe it. I think maybe they did chip their gods out of stone, I think especially after the flood. I think there was enough stories told about these gods that were here, and how powerful they were, and how wonderful they were, and how they helped humanity. I think that those ancient fallen angels, the Watchers, came down and they taught mankind some really cool stuff. Agriculture, weapons, metallurgy. What if it happened today? What if some really smart and powerful, quote-unquote, interdimensional entities showed up today? Maybe they wouldn't call themselves interdimensional. Maybe they'd say they were from a different universe, a different galaxy. Suppose They cured cancer, solved the energy crisis and climate change, and fixed the stock market woes in 1 week. Don't you think millions of people would follow them? What if they declared themselves to be from a distant galaxy and maybe even our genetic ancestors? Huh? Said, oh yeah, we seeded the right DNA down and I can see all the, you know, the monkey people, you know, the ones that believe that we came from monkeys jumping up and down going, that's it, that's it. That's why there's this, you know, we can trace all the monkeys and then all of a sudden people pop out and start building cities. That's why. What do they call it? Panspermia? Our genetic ancestors? What a rift that would create in our society. You know, the Bible talks about that. It talks about in the end there would be this great delusion that God would give us over to. It could be it. What a world. What a rift that would create in our world. I mean, religions would implode. Politics would explode. The entire culture would be convulsing in on itself. And yet, you know, it's like as everything's just kind of exploding and convulsing and everybody's just like, you know, like they got hit up alongside the head with a 2x4, there would be groups, huge groups of people that would shout that the only way forward would be to follow these masters and go along with what they wanted. And really, isn't that what worship is? I mean, all the chaos in our society that the elites have created till now, all the divisions and confusion, now there would be a strong hand to right the ship. Make us go the right way. Oh, this'll fix everything. Just do as they say. They're so smart. They're so powerful. Look at them. Just look on them. Our society has been obliterated by the very institutions that have been set in place to safeguard it. And it's the same beings that destroyed us, and now they'll want to come and put us back together. You know, you think of all the things that have been destroyed. You know, the dilution of our cultures through forced immigration, the destruction of the family, our upside down politics. I mean, it's all designed to create fear and confusion. I mean, the tools of control, like who's been operating the levers for the last few years? Who has allowed this to happen? What if these same beings have been around since way back and now they've come in and they've thrown these lies into everything and they've destroyed what was set up and they have destroyed what Christianity sets up, you know, the importance of family and the importance of law and the importance of, you know, I mean, even the golden rule, do unto others you would have them do unto you. All that's been trashed. And it's created more fear and confusion, made everything upside down. And in the meantime, they've also started thinning the veil between this science that helped destroy us. This scientism that helped destroy us. Like, oh, let's change everything. Let's throw out this old Christian ideas of morality and law and justice. And oh no, it's all different now. We're new. We're modern. We're, you know, something else is going on. And it's like, you know, they've torn the veil. They've shredded it. Now, between the spiritual and the physical, they've ruined the physical and they've brought in the spiritual, and it's thinning and it's tattered. The materialists in their Star Trek reality, it's become naked and broken. Even the woo-woo people, and I'm including Christians here, have no definite answers anymore. It's all up in the air. This is because the truth stands in the middle of it all. And that's the last thing that they want you to look at. Don't look at the truth. These small g gods are returning, and the last thing they want you to see is the truth. They want to trick people once again. There is nothing new under the sun, the Bible tells us. This has happened to mankind before. The fallen watchers taught mankind all this forbidden knowledge about things like weapon making, warfare, agriculture, astrology, seduction, and sorcery. What is sorcery? Well, in Greek it's called pharmakia. Where do we get that from? Let me just give you this simple little thing. You know, I always used to wonder, how did the ancient people know? I mean, if you take the monkey man approach, how did they know what to combine? Let's take the concept of ayahuasca, which is really popular nowadays. You know, it's like, oh, I went and did an ayahuasca trip. Yeah, good for you. How did they figure that out? There's like, what, 10 million different plants in South America? And you got to find the right combination, certain roots and certain leaves. As far as I understand it, you take roots and you chop them and you boil them. And then you put it with a certain leaf. And what the roots do is stop the stomach from taking the material, the DHT or whatever you call it, out of the leaf. Like, how did they know that? Did they just start combining things? Like, how many natives had to die combining different leaves before they figured out ayahuasca? I don't think it was trial and error. I think they were taught it. And in fact, in their own stories, they were taught it. Who taught it to them? Well, they have stories of feathered serpents or something. I forget now. I read it a long time ago. But they'll tell the story that they were taught it. Well, that's our friends, the watchers, the fallen angels, that taught the cutting of roots. It's called pharmakia. And it's where we get our root word, pharmacy. Potions. Drugs. Now, is it not possible, if you bring things back to the modern, that these same entities, because it says, you know, in the Bible that they came down and they took wives from wherever they wanted. Now that leaves it very open. Like, were they abducting them? Were they trading them? What were they doing? There's a lot of people saying now that these, you know, they call them UFOs. They come down. I mean, how do you know those aren't fallen angels? You don't know. So these abductions, these people, and there's so many stories of abductions. Like, is that taking wives? Hard to say, isn't it? They definitely have an interest in people, and they definitely have an interest in our biology. You think these little gray entities are from planet Zobar, from distant 12 million light years away? Or are they the same thing? The same thing we've been dealing with from the time that we were created. Same entities. They're not from a different galaxy. They're just from a different dimension. In archaeology, as the, you know, monkey man theories begin to fall apart, you know, the monkey man, you know, the one who started out, you know, eating lizards and learned how to beat him with a stick and then how to put a sharp stone on the end of the stick. That whole theory is falling apart. Any archaeologists are discovering these leaps forward in mankind's historical record. Things like metallurgy and agriculture just seem to spring up overnight. Like they've looked at all of the historical record. It's just like, that's not possible. It's like punctuated equilibrium happened all over again. You know, where the lizard lays an egg and a chicken pops out. It's like it strikes again, and these cities that suddenly pop up, and they have all this technology. Like, where did it come from? This is where you can tune out all the blah, 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 blah from these breathless archaeologists and all this stuff. Ancient people were smart. They just lacked technology, which was traded to them by a race of malicious, angelic rebels who have a deep understanding of the material world. They watched God create it. They understand it. They are way smarter than us. And there's nothing new under the sun. We now have a world where many are waking up to this new paradigm. Suddenly the, you know, compact little materialistic world is not what it seems. Nothing is as it was. It's all stumps and brush and slash piles. The media lies about reality, and the alternative media is filled with, you know, weird stories of, you know, you can find anything out there, like mud floods and aliens and vibrational theories and, you know, all the previously debunked science, and it's all just piled together. It's really hard to figure out. And I really think that what it's about is Satan is first and foremost a liar and a deceiver. That old devil. False trails that go nowhere. That is his specialty. So let's take stock of where we are. Because I believe time is running short. A lot of what is happening in the world seems rushed. It seems like the plans of these fallen angels, these Nephilim, these evil bloodlines, the elites, are now being pushed so hard and so fast that many people are beginning to wake up. They're beginning to see, like, they're beginning to, you know, jump up and down and try and look over the brush piles and see, like, oh my goodness, like things are not the way I thought they were. These plans and these traps that have been put together. I mean, you think about it, maybe over hundreds, maybe thousands of years are being triggered, almost like they're in a panic. It's like evil is losing its anonymity. The evil human puppets that, you know, stayed in the shadows of our society are suddenly being pushed into the light. The media world is being primed for, I think, for these fallen angels, these ancient ones from far away. They're ready to save us. I think they're getting ready to bring them back. I could go on and on about slash and stumps and confused reality. I could show every dead end and false trail and, but let's put it in a nutshell, because there isn't time enough in this podcast. In fact, I think I'm coming to the end of it. Today, people argue about direction, but it's mostly noise and confusion. False trails and all the isms that are supposed to lead us out, you know, capitalism, communism, feminism, scientism, spiritism, they're all just divisions and distractions from the truth. Left versus right, men versus women, old versus young, poor versus rich, white versus color, Gentile versus Jew. Just take a look at Europe. For years, they fought for dominance amongst one another. You know, France, England, Spain. And now it took one little, like, concept, leftism, and it flooded through. And now they've invited in a people with a hostile way of thinking that will dominate all of them under the scimitar of Mohammedism. Is this white versus colored? Is it strictly a religious war? Is it Christianity versus Mohammedism? All the struggles today boil down to one thing. It's good versus evil. and it's all in the human heart. Solzhenitsyn said that the line between good and evil runs through every human heart. I believe that. I believe that only the cross of Christ gives humanity the chance to be both forgiven and healed from that evil heart. I also believe that at the end of this battle for our souls, which is what it is, our souls and our minds, that's where World War III is. Everybody expected it to be nukes, and I'm not saying that it won't get kinetic at some point. But right now, I see World War III. It's our souls and our minds that they're after. And in the end, there will only be two standards raised in this war. You know what a standard is? It's like something on a pole you raise up and you try and get the soldiers to come around it so you can fight. Two standards in this war. Not 1,000 the way it is right now. There'll be two standards. The standard of Lucifer and his fallen angels, and the standard of the risen and victorious Christ. And at this point, you just gotta choose wisely. Here's what you must do to find the right road. The first thing you got to do is you got to humble yourself. There is too much pride in this world today. Everybody's been taught since they were a kid to be proud, to think of themselves. You know, it's like, oh, you wouldn't want your child to, you know, look down on themselves. So everybody's been taught to think of yourself as really something, like, oh, you're perfect the way you are. No, you're not. It's time to humble yourself. That's something that you don't see in the world much today, is somebody who has a good view of themselves, like, I do this wrong, I do that wrong. I need help with this. Admit that you're lost. You know, when you're out in this bunch of slash and you can't find your way out and it gets confusing, first thing you got to do is admit you're lost. That's what I had to do when I was lost out there. It's like, first thing I had to do is say, you know what? I don't know where I'm going. I'm lost. And once you admit you're lost, then ask Jesus to guide you. You got to ignore the noise and confusion in this world, the slash and the stumps. And it's time to start backtracking. Your pride has led you somewhere. You thought that you knew where to go. You thought you knew how to find your way out. You followed a trail and you thought it was a good trail. You said, oh, well, this person and that person told me to go this way. And you've followed it through, I don't know, a false religion, false scientism, faults, whatever, and you're still lost. You got to backtrack till you reach a familiar place, a place where you know in your heart it's firm ground. And if you've humbled yourself, you'll know when it's firm ground. You got to read your map. Get your map out and read it. That's your Bible. You may as well go back and you may as well start reading the Bible again, because there's wisdom in there like you wouldn't believe. There's nothing new under the sun. I keep saying that. That comes from the Bible. There's nothing new under the sun. This has all been done before. It's time to go back there. It's time to start reading it. Then you need to check your compass. And by that, I mean, you need to pray for direction. The compass points north. God will point you in the right direction. If you pray, if you've humbled yourself, and you know you've went the wrong way, and you're trying to backtrack and you're trying to find the right trail, and you're reading your Bible and you're praying for direction, God's not going to let you down. Proceed cautiously and in humility. Feel the peace that passes understanding. That's in the Bible. Have faith in your Savior. Because, hey, this is the adventure. Once you know you can find the right trail, be bold. Have courage. God will not leave you. He will not forsake you. You'll find your road. He planned a road for you from the beginning. Oh, yeah, and also keep an edge on your knife and keep your matches dry. Lead on, dear Savior. Vaya con Dios. Eh?